The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back. We are, of course, broadcasting live from the northwest of Ireland on what is a nice, bright, calm, warm day. Hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're able to enjoy it. Coming up after the bingo numbers, we'll have Seamus Gunn in our company. He'll be answering legal questions and what have you. So we'll have a wee chat about the situation in American politics as well. Both he and I and many out there too have quite an interest in that. Greg, giving puberty blockers for medical reasons like early puberty is a different issue. This issue is the age of children making the decision. You're correct, Greg, to say this needs to be challenged. Big money to be made by pharmaceutical companies. We will end up with a very distorted human race. Some may be neither male or female. Science, as we speak, is manipulated to suit particular ideologies or agendas that are totally anti-human. Well, I believe we're sort of in a flux at the moment, whereby 4, 5, 6 years ago, things moved very much in one direction. And then I think more recently there's sort of a move back in another direction. We are still in the situation, I think, where we are determining, you know, how we support people, how we nurture people, how we treat people, what have you. So I think it's very worthwhile to have the conversation now, because I believe we're in a position now of influence as to, you know, what kind of a country or world we want going forward, you know, and banging heads against each other or banging our heads together, it's not going to get us anywhere, really, because fundamentally it is, this is, for me anyway, it's very important about children. Are there any statistics available for the number of children looking to be put on puberty blockers? Is it a high percentage? Is it something that all children will be looking into the future? It's a very, very small number, but they also are very important children as well. I'll get that stat for you, but as I say, it is a very small amount of children that would have been put on them last year in Ireland. The lady just suggested that you can find what you are looking for if you search hard enough. That's very true. But likewise, does that not apply to the opposite side too? All these actions taken by adults onto children who are emotionally and physically and psychologically immature, something's not right here. Another, Greg, I honestly don't know what this world is coming to. I'm 60 years old and I'm starting to think, how the hell did our generation make it this far? My God, what has the world come to? Well, we have to engage in the conversation, though, and make sure we have the type of world that we want. Why do you not have a debate on the killing of children in Gaza instead of a debate about interfering with children's rights that have been happening since time began? Well, this type of treatment to children is actually relatively recent, and of course also it's very topical at the moment. We talk extensively about the situation in Gaza and the killing of children, not as much as we possibly should, because that is such a severe issue. You should really talk about that 3 hours a day, every day. But obviously there has to be space for other stuff as well. It is horrendous what's happening. Maybe to make this life-changing choice at below 16 years is too early. This has never been discussed in the Dáil or proven otherwise by mental health experts. Many who underwent this treatment in the UK were proven to be too young. Plus, some were not transgender and were gay. Being trans is a minority situation that has become a cult, that's become mainstreamed without the proper analysis or evidence to support how to address it. The question is not transphobic, but is protecting children. We need to get this right for the trans, gay, bi and straight children. To say that it's become mainstream, though, I mean, really, like, how visual is it? How many trans people do you see on TV or in films or musicians or what have you? To say that it's mainstream, I don't think actually is accurate, to be honest with you. The conversation is happening and some people would have you believe that it is. But we're still, I think, in that conversation stage. So when a child takes these drugs, gets her breasts removed and later wants to trans back, that's okay with the senator. Under 16 is too young. Children cannot marry under 16, vote, etc. Why? Because they're not mature or self-aware enough to make those decisions. How many genders actually are there, says the listener? Well, it depends on your point of view. Many would say scientifically there are two XXXY, men and women. That's someone's sex, of course. Then you can talk about gender. And at the end of the day, some people believe there's 9. Some people believe there's 1,000. Some people believe there are 2. Science would suggest there are 2. The psychological effect, and we know that your psychological situation does affect your physical health, and this is when you are going through change, your adolescence. Not enough debate. The CAS report should be debated. The super influential pro-trans lobby can say all they want, but it is wrong. I mean, is that really reflective of what's happening in this world today? Bud Light, an American beer company, Budweiser, effectively, they had one very, very small... what would you call it, collaboration with a trans person, and their sales dropped through the floor, and they promised not to do it again, effectively. So I don't know if the pro-trans lobby is as influential as you might make out. When I was 11 or 12 or even 15, I and most other children could not make this life-changing and possibly destructive decision like that. Where's the common sense? Greg, in all honesty, we can't use the equity card on a situation like this. A child starting puberty early and being delayed, and a child who wants to stop puberty altogether, when you think about it, the child would never know about puberty blockers unless some adult, most likely a medical professional, had suggested that to a parent and child. You'd have to wonder why they would think giving a chemical castration to a child is a good thing. Now, the puberty blockers in and themselves, the science says they are reversible. What happens is that sometimes at 14, 15, 16, children then are put on gender-affirming hormones, estrogen or testosterone, and that is where the irreversible situations happen. Why is there so many public-funded intercultural centres in Letterkenny? Should be enough when other bodies like Citizens Advice and Community Development Projects are also funded to deliver the same information? I'm not sure, but listen, there's Irish centres in every city in the world, isn't there? And Irish support groups and what have you, and spend our life talking about how we're going over to London, literally going over to London as guests of a huge Irish organisation which assists Irish people in getting jobs, accommodation, and is based there in England for Irish people. I presume... the support here for people that have come to this country, it's really just quite similar. Correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before, probably wrong more often than I've been right. But anyway. Okay, we say good morning now to friend of the show, regular contributor, Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, Remelton and Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Seamus.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you on the show. I suppose... We often talk about American politics in the legal context because so much has been happening over there and continues to. But obviously whatever happens in America has ripples around the world, not least in Ireland. And it's all changed since we last spoke. Kamala Harris did her first sort of formal sit-down interview in the early hours of this morning. And both she and Donald Trump are canvassing right across America because the US presidential election is just around the corner, Seamus.
Yeah, very much so, Greg. All changed and changed utterly in many ways. It's hard to believe, but some time ago, you might recall that we referenced Kamala Harris during the Biden term and wondering why she wasn't getting any more exposure then. Well, that wheel has certainly turned full circle now, and she's certainly out there up front. And you'd have to say, doing very well at the moment. Now, it is early days, and she had that unscripted interview last night, which seemed to have all reports it has gone well. She wasn't being prompted. She wasn't using any prompts. She was having, and I think that this is the kind of the narrative they're portraying as a person who can have a chat with somebody and deal with the issues and try to put them out there. So, like that seems to have gone down well from the very outset, and obviously it's going to get an awful lot tougher, and there's a big debate in September next or whatever, and 10th of September 11th, which will pit her against Donald Trump. But what I'm fascinated by is that is not his decline, but as to how they have tried to deal with her or haven't been able to deal with her to date. That the Trump campaign has to some large degree, I think, waned in the last month, and ever since the assassination attempt, which you'd understand would have taken an awful lot out of the man. Like with all due respects, like he's well into his 70s now, but I think he has actually changed. His persona has nearly changed since Kamala Harris has come on the set, and they haven't yet got a real handle on her.
Well, see, the problem is, in relation to that, Seamus, I think the issue is that his team seem to feel that attack politics, name-calling, stuff that worked really well, Sleepy Joe, all that kind of stuff, it's not playing well with the electorate. They don't want to hear that. But unfortunately, it seems he goes off script at his rallies and he can't stop it. He can't stop calling her things like, what is it he calls her, comrade?
Call her communist.
Communist Camilla.
All sorts of derogatory terms. But actually, and he's playing into their hand on that, because they're saying, so this is the same old. I mean, it's not making any sense and people are fed up with it. And they're right. And so they're on the pulse of the people with that. And if he doesn't actually get back on the economy, which people have said, like, that's all an election in the US used to be about, he is on a slippery slope. The polls suggest there's about 2 points in it, but it's now in the Harris, it's in Harris's favour rather than in Trump's favour. But they haven't actually got around to either being able to get him on point, which is actually most peculiar. But if he thinks that the slagging and the name calling will get him back into the House, into the White House, he's going to be very sorry about that approach, because it's not going to work. And the momentum that is now getting up there for Harris, even on the policy issues, like, there is not that much between them on immigration. She was a prosecutor herself down there, you know, so they have that kind of covered, I think. The inflation point, inflation has been coming down anyway, so it has, from way up at 9%. So again, you know, there's not an awful lot in that. Israel, Israel's always going to be supported by the USA, whether we like it or we don't, but that's just reality. And she has said, though, quite interestingly, that she really wants to bring that to an end. Like, so she, you know, she is energised.
Back in favour of fracking again, too. Fracking obviously is a big one.
She's rolled back on that. Yep. Interestingly, as you will know very well, Pennsylvania, that's one of the big swing states. And that is actually a fracking, that's a fracking county, so to speak. So, I mean, again.
Sounds wrong, but I know what you mean, yeah.
It's a state. That's exactly.
It's almost like a swear word is what I'm saying.
It's very heavily involved in that. Type of activity. So there are a lot of votes there. And the other thing that I think was quite refreshing last night, not really highlighted at all, she said that she may have a Republican in her cabinet. I mean, she may have one from the other side on her cabinet. And again, that shows you, like, more forward thinking.
I wonder, will it work? They seem to want to heal America, that they want to get away from the angry politics, that they just want the country to come together, to stop running it down, because Donald Trump's one of his key campaign traits is to say that America's a basket case and he's the only one can fix it. But she's saying, hold on, yeah, America is great. There's an awful lot positive happening here and we need to address it. It just depends what message lands best with the voters.
Yeah, and that is always the way, and that's what will ultimately probably determine the election. But if you think of this, that if he goes into a debate against Kamala Harris, who is a very well spoken, a good lawyer, a good debater, she was very good in court. She'd done 2 terms of attorney general. You know, she was a district attorney. So if he goes into a debate with her and he isn't prepared to back those big points up with facts and figures, it could be entirely different.
I'm not sure, but American
entirely different outcome. Yeah, I don't think you'd get away with that.
But journalism,
he will be put on the spot.
But just in relation to that, journalism's gone to pot in America, and some would say elsewhere as well. Because I've seen a few interviews with Trump. There was one where it was just him and a reporter, Mike Back and Forward's job. He had a sit down with Dr. Phil, remarkably, and he also had a conversation, as it was labelled, with Elon Musk. But he can say anything, and he's not challenged, right? So he says they're emptying asylum centres. What do you call the old horrible world for mental health institutions? But he says they're emptying prisons. Send them up here, and he says it, but there's no challenge to it. You know what I mean? And what they do then is, after the fact, they fact check it. which I think is a bit, you know. So yeah. A journalist doesn't sit down and say, right, just in relation to that, Mr. Trump, you said this is happening on the southern border. This is what the statistics are saying. What information do you have to say that that's not the truth? That doesn't happen over there. And in fairness, Camilla wasn't...
That's the whole point.
She
that's
wasn't really challenged last night either.
No, but that was her first... That's her first interview, and she was setting out the stall as such, and I presume that that was the rules on which she engaged in the first instance. It was given like in a more casual type approach. But the point I am making, and I think you are covering it or alluding to it, is that whenever they go down one-to-one, and then when he does come out with these brash statements, which you're saying you're referring to, and then she's in a position, well, now, given the exact statistics on that, which Biden was not able to do the last day, which we mentioned on your program. He just was all over the place. He couldn't pull anything. And he was left with an open goal several times, but he didn't take advantage. I'm saying I believe she will.
It'll be interesting.
And that'll all change. Yeah. And the media thing is interesting, too, because this was mooted somewhere since I was speaking to you last, that this election... The misinformation, the artificial intelligence and the stuff that is going to go out there will or could have an influence on it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be something that I think that we would have to just sit back and observe. But for the first time ever, there's that much of that out there that if you say it often enough, people are going to believe it, mm-hmm. even though it's completely untrue. Steve Bannon, Trump's guy way back in whatever, 16 or so, he was the main election officer, or one of his main advisors. He said that if you keep feeding them enough BS, they're going to pick it up, mm-hmm. even though it's not true at all.
Yeah, 100%.
So, and this is where the media has a responsibility, and they have waned from it to some degree so far.
And the thing, a couple of things that are interested in that before we take a break and get to questions, like there's an awful lot of fake accounts and doctoring of photos that show the likes of Taylor Swift backing Donald Trump, right? And if it's spread around, you can say, they didn't do it, but the image is there and it lands. Also, which I think is really fascinating to me, is that X, which is apparently the town hall for the world and the only place where you get balanced information and all views, its owner, it's a private company run by a billionaire with his own interests at heart, is backing Trump. He's amplifying everything Trump says, even the false stuff that his own users are fact-checking as being false. And as influential as he believes that his platform is, it is not given Donald Trump a lift at all. And that, to me, is fascinating because it's a perfect example of a massive social media company and probably the number one news social media company actually unable to influence voters in the favour of Donald Trump. So that's been a real eye-opener to me about the influence of social media. I accept what you're saying about AI, and I agree with you. But just generally speaking, he's got the number one world platform in news behind him, and it's not lifting him.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has his own platform. What is it? Is it Truth Social or something
Truth Social,
like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. He has that there for him, and putting the same stuff out there. But I think people are more I hope and I believe more intelligent than that, and they can decipher the what's true and what's false. But if you're talking about getting enough of it out to enough people, it certainly will have an influence. Will it have enough to change the swing states? Who knows? But I mean, the last time we spoke, Biden was in the doldrums. It was all over by the cheering, so to speak. And now here we are with this bounce. And at least it makes it interesting on the run into the beginning of November.
Yeah, it's funny too that people will hear what they want to hear. A texter says, not hard to see what mass radio establishments have hung their flag. Don't forget, 70 million voters turned out to support the Republican Party at the last election. Not all Irish support St. Kamala. Now, I don't believe I've said anything actually that favours one candidate or the other, but it just goes to show, you hear what you want to hear at some point. But anyway, listen, thank you.
Yeah, well, yeah, supposed to. Well, yeah, you hear what you want, what you favour yourself, or what you like to, and then you put your own interpretation on it, and it becomes nearly factual for you, whether it is or it isn't. Mm-hmm. But no, I agree. No, we can't take sides. All we're doing is commenting as it is evolving, and it is ever evolving, and never more so than now. And certainly there'll be more to come. But I just think that Trump and his camp are deflated at the moment. I think the body language isn't the same. I think that they made a faux pas during the week in that cemetery where in Arlington, I think it was, in Virginia. where there was photographs taken, which really was out of touch. And in fact, actually, it was against federal state law. And they pushed the poor guy or an individual who was working in the cemetery. Now, obviously, nothing will follow out of that. But I don't think Trump would have made that type of mistake before. But that is a mistake.
Yeah.
And if they're trying to use that for electioneering, well, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. And I do believe that their star is not at the moment on the ascent, and they're going to have to refresh it somewhat. Mm. The name calling just won't
well. And Trump has referenced it on numerous occasions now that his staff are telling him to focus on policy, but he struggles to do that. And I think Trump supporters or Kamala supporters, one way or other, he has to prove that he's not a one-trick pony. Because if he keeps going back to the tried and tested, it's probably not going to work for him this year. So that's why his campaign is saying, look, stick to policies, talk about immigration, talk about the economy. But he can't help calling people names. And it's clearly, at this point, according to the polls, not working. Right, we're putting some questions to Seamus Gunn now. This coming by post. We're retired from farming. We signed over the farm and willed the house. We are leaving it over to our son. We have our dog in the house, I think it says. But anyway, there is another house on the farm that's willed to another son. If we were to sign it over to him now, what would the tax situation be? Both houses are worth €250 each, which means that any changes to inheritance rules are not going to probably impact on them, I don't think. But go ahead, Seamus.
Yeah. Well, we have touched on that those thresholds should be revised, and I think you mentioned in one of the shows some time ago that it was mooted, but it hasn't happened yet, and they're going to have to come in line with the current values on properties and houses, which are escalating and increasing all the time. Even this week, I've seen a report, up another couple of percent. But anyway, they are what they are at the moment, and that's 335,000 is the maximum if you're a son or a daughter to inherit from a parent. In this particular case, the couple are considering now transferring over the house rather than leaving it in the will. And it's as broad as it's long as far as that goes, because it's still the same taxation. It's capital taxation. So it's either inheritance tax or gift tax. It's the same threshold. So if they wanted to go ahead, certainly they could do so, transfer the house over at this point. As I mentioned, it shouldn't be any difference with regard to the tax. It's below the son's threshold. So therefore he's not in the bracket where if he's above the 335, he pays 33%. He's not there. So, and he still has some of his threshold left. And what there would be an implication is there another strand of revenue and tax is stamp duty. And there would be stamp duty payable on the 250,000 in relation to the transfer. So that's something. And then there would be legal fees and some land registry fees. But from the point of view of capital taxes, it shouldn't make any difference whether they do it now or whether it's left in the will, based on those values of 250,000.
I've been paying business rates to the council for decades, but not at the full amount, as my business simply can't afford to pay the full amount. I've been getting letters from solicitors about this. I want to make a settlement, but they're looking for the full amount from tens of years back. Am I right in saying that anything over 7 years old is more... or more is non-recoverable? P.S. I'm currently and have been making weekly payments to the council by direct debit towards the rates.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation. They're right in to some degree, and I think what the reference there is the 6 years statute of limitations on a debt. Where some problem is that this is a running account, and they have continued to acknowledge and pay off it over the years. And it going beyond the 6 and 7 years, I think they've gone and said it's 10 years. Now, that's very laudable. And, you have to hats off them. Like lots of retailers are struggling with rates at the moment. And that's common cause right across the county and the country. So they should obviously keep the dialogue up with the local authority. And you would hope to come to some type of arrangement. But I don't see them compromising the sum due, because that's the rate that is set for the property annually, and therefore is collectible. So if they do compromise that, they'd be in a situation, the local authority might be saying, well, if they do that for one, and the next one will be looking for it as well. I think that the best case scenario is to come to some arrangement whereby the payments can be made over maybe a longer period of time and stretch them out further, and so that it would be easier managed as such. I think there could be some trouble with regard to trying to get an actual settlement. As far as applying the statute of limitations on that particular point, because it's a running account, I unfortunately do have my doubts whether that would apply. It can apply if you have a debt and it's not acknowledged and 6 years go past and there's no action taken to collect. In that situation, it could become statute barred. But if it was registered as a judgment mortgage, well, then that'll extend it out again.
Can you please ask Seamus the following question? If I have left my house in trust for special needs relation, can I be asked to sell that property if I go into a nursing home? Thank you.
Well, the point about I think the reference in the Fair Deal Scheme, which has been in place for a number of years, and the assets that are taken into consideration whenever one's going into a care home are valued as at that date. They haven't said that if they still are the primary owner of that or have been within the last 5 years, I would consider that that will be an asset that will be reckonable as far as considering what their contribution may be or may not be with regard to their care going forward. The arrangement that they have with the third party, that's entirely a separate matter, and I don't really see that as influencing it. It's the valuation of your property and your assets as at the time. Now, there is a threshold as well. But the first 70, if you're married, I think it's a 72 or 76,000, it is exempt. And thereafter, you pay a portion of what your income is. And then it is sealed for over 3 years at 7.5%. And then thereafter, it would not be collectible from your estate. But up to that amount, it would be. So I think it's likely that it could still fall into the net.
Mm. Here's one that comes up from time to time in one form or other. I've told the Gardaí about cattle coming onto my ground. They say that it's a civil matter and they can't get involved. It is my land. They won't get involved. So how do I sort this? Now, I'm not sure if these cattle are in sort of full time or they drift in and off. By the way it's phrased, it sounds like the cattle might be sort of somewhat ever present on the property. But the Gardaí say it's a civil matter.
It's a trespass matter, which one would usually define as being a civil matter. And obviously there's an obligation on the owners of the animals to keep them in their own property and keep them fenced in. And if they go wandering or they go onto other person's lands and they depasture them, in that situation, that can give rise to damages and certainly give rise to loss to the person who owns the lands. So I think they're probably going to have to engage with their legal representative and give them some instructions. I think that it would be very useful to have some type of agricultural report, maybe from an agricultural consultant, to assess the damage that is done to the lands that we're now claiming have been trespassed upon. And then armed with that, it'll give them a little bit more clout when it comes to approaching the third party to say, well, this is the type of damage you're talking about and have to make good if it continues. And it certainly could be a catalyst for at least stopping it as it going forward or into the future and nipping it in the bud. Whether or not they'd ever want to go down the route of taking an action, quite entitled to do so for trespass and seek their damages and their costs, that's an avenue definitely open to them. You'd want to look at the ultimate cost that's involved as against what the recovery is going to be before you take that jump, because, you know, the economics and the economies of scale may dictate otherwise. But I think certainly if it's continuing and it's a major issue, yes, I think they'd probably have to get their lawyers on the scene.
If they don't, is there any amount of time that can pass if the cattle are ever present whereby there's some sort of grazing rights or what have you?
Not in that situation, okay. Right? No, right. Definitely would not be. It's obviously privately owned land, and it's if they're straying onto it or trespassing on it, well, the owner has the rights to keep the property, and also nobody has the right to damage it. So I think that if the third party was aware that there was a civil action coming down the line and it was going to attract maybe some damages anyway, but considerable legal costs, I think that could sober it up a bit.
Right, this came up as a text earlier in the weekend. It's tricky. They're always tricky, these ones. I'm at my wit's end. I'm wondering if you could give help. There's a wooden fence between my house and the next door neighbour. They put the fence up years ago, but a good part of it has been blown down since the end of April, and we've caught a visitor of theirs trying to come onto our backyard through where the fence was twice now, and not the kind of person you want around. I'm not sure what that means, but anyway. I've asked the neighbour, would she please fix it, as we, or she, have no privacy now, and she said she would. That was April, though, and I asked again in June, still nothing. I want to know how to get this sorted once and for all. She's renting it out for the last 5 years. I have a child here. I don't want people thinking it's normal to come onto my property like this. Also, the rest of the fence is unsafe as the wind is blowing like a sheet of paper. Scared it'll damage our conservatory or our car or indeed our child. Who pays for that damage in that situation? There's just no talking to this lady. She doesn't care. She can walk away from it all. We spent years saving to get our home sorted. It's all really getting me down. I don't want bother with anyone. All I want is to be able to feel safe in my own home and that my child is safe. Please tell me how to sort this. Citizens Advice weren't able to offer them much assistance. So when I first read this, there's three things happening here. Firstly, it seems this person owns their own home. Secondly, the neighbour is renting. But thirdly, they didn't seem to reference the landlord at all, so I'm not sure how significant that is. What would you advise Mary in that situation, Seamus?
There's no quick fix to this, Greg. That's an interesting question. It's also a complex question. The landlord is obviously not, is elsewhere. Property's rented for, I think they said, for the last 5 years. But the landlord is the person that's responsible for the upkeep and maintenance of it, in my view. So it's to the landlord that they should address the issue. Now, going forward, it's difficult because neighbours, you know, if they fall out, that remains the scene for some time to come. And the absentee landlord probably may not be too concerned because they're obviously not living there. What I would be suggesting, first of all, is to clarify the situation with regard to the fence, whether or not it's a boundary fence. And if it's a boundary fence, then that would be 100% owned. The way the question is phrased, it seems to me that the other party does own the fence. So if that's the case, well, there's an obligation on that party to maintain it to such a degree that it doesn't become a hazard. Now, they have mentioned children here, et cetera. So it sounds to me it has fallen down. And it's no longer fit for purpose, they're claiming. So if that's the situation, that's a very valid point to be made to the other party, and that is the landlord. If it's a party fence, then both parties are sort of responsible for it, and they would have to come to some type of an agreement as to how to deal with it going forward. But that doesn't obviously help the individual who has written in the query in the first instance. They want to establish, though, where the boundary actually is, and they may need to engage someone like a digital surveyor to go out and carry out a survey so they know where the boundary is. Then I think that they're probably going to have to get, if they've already approached it with them and got nowhere, they're probably going to have to go along and get some legal advice with a view to writing and putting suggestions as to how they would move forward with the maintenance of the fence and see what the reaction would be to that. If that is not working, well, then you could be going down into a litigation situation. And again, if you're doing that over a fence, it's going to get expensive. And you know, you're going to probably have a digital land surveyor in. You're going to have to issue proceedings and court. And this is over a fence between two neighbours. And I would not easily recommend that as being the solution, if at all possible. A practical way, but I mean, this may be slightly unpalatable. If they wanted to keep it entirely within their control, they could get the boundary survey done. And then rather than intrude at all or have any dealings with the neighbour, they could set the boundary just slightly on their own side, maybe a few inches just, but their own fence up, and leave the other fence as it is, because it belongs to the other party.
I think that sounds like the best option. And when you start adding up the costs.
Although the point, probably the caveat on that is that they might say that, oh, but sure, we're losing a bit of our own ground then. But their boundary will still be in the right place. They'll be on their side of it. But they will have a secure fence and some peace of mind. And the other fence, can, whatever happens to it, so be it. But and they wouldn't have any issues with anyone.
I mean, you'd have to swallow the neighbour getting one up on you, but it's about your happiness and your contentment in the long term.
And in the long term, that's probably worth far more to them to have that and that peace of mind than to get involved in litigation, the stress of it, the cost of it, you know, and the fact that it will be going on for some considerable time and maybe then having to, you know, rely on a court order and to implement it. So that's a practical solution. But as I said, they maybe if they don't want to compromise the exact area that they have under their control, it mightn't be the solution. But it is one that I think could be worth considering. Yeah. But if otherwise, if they really want to stick to the line, well, they have to engage, get a digital survey done, and take it from there and go down the legal route.
All right. If you want to speak to Seamus and his team, they have offices in Remelton and Letterkenny, McLaughlingon and Co. But also one of the early adopters of the online space. Yes, where can you be found?
Thankfully so, Greg. Yeah, gun.ie or Donegalsolicitors.ie. Yeah. Hopefully.
Thanks, Seamus. Take care of yourself. Have a lovely weekend. Now, tomorrow at 7 p.m, a talk will be given entitled Donald Trump and the Remaking of America. It's at 7 p.m, as I mentioned, in the Old Chapel, Dunloe. And Professor Kevin Boyle, a historian of modern America and Northwestern University, at Northwestern University in Chicago, Illinois, will deliver that talk. Good morning to you, Professor. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's great. Now, we have about 4 minutes or 5 minutes, so I want to maximise that time. So what are you going to be outlining for those in attendance tomorrow?
So I want to talk really about the ways in which Donald Trump tried in 2021 to overthrow the election, how that ties into the bigger picture of Donald Trump's politics and where we might be going after this election.
And is this coming from a particular point of view, a Democratic stroke Republican point of view, or is this just an observation of history in as neutral a way as possible?
I like to think it's the latter.
Yeah, okay. And pick out some of the interesting elements that you'll be talking to those in attendance, Kevin.
Well, one of the things that I really want to stress is that what Donald Trump and the Republican Party tried to do in 2016 and 2020 was to remake the way the Republican Party worked. Who was it that voted for the Republican Party? Who was it that the party pitched itself to? And one of the really key parts of that are white working people. And the question really is, did the party serve their interest or did it use them?
What's your view? Or are you just going to pose that question?
No, I definitely have a view on that question. And one of the things that I think is really important to see is the ways in which Donald Trump tried to say that he was building the party of the working man, but in policy didn't really do that. But when he needed to motivate that segment of the party in 2021, that's exactly what he did.
And in American politics now, there is blinded support, whether it is for Donald Trump or indeed now for Kamala Harris. There's a very small percentage of the population that really think about policies and the consequences and what have you. It seems, I could be wrong in relation to that, of course.
No, I think that's fair. I think there's a very strong sense in both parties that people have their candidate. And so this election is going to be very, very close. And it's going to be decided by that small group of people who could vote in either direction.
And also, too, you are learning of your own history and your connections to Donegal. I'm sure we'll hear about that as well. And also to drive home the historical facts that we know, Brendan McShivney of the University of Galway will also be on hand to discuss the Irish Constabulary's killing of one of your forebears in Dunloe. This is a riot that took place in 1835. Now you've really got my attention.
Yeah, I have to admit that was a bit of a surprise to me as well. So my family, the Boyle side of my family, is from Dunloe. And I really didn't know its history at all. But Brendan has done an extraordinary job recovering it. And it turns out, as you said, that one of my great-great-great-grandfathers, there's some number of greats anyways, was in fact killed by the constabulary in the streets of Dunloe in 1835.
And that story in and of itself, we could definitely do an hour on, I have no doubt. In fact, we might revisit that at some point if you would be open to that, Kevin. And with the wonders of technology now, we can do that pretty much wherever you are. But it's just a note for people's diaries. If you're interested, A, in that part of West Donegal and Donegal history as a whole, but also a talk on Donald Trump and the remaking of America. It's all in the Old Chapel, Dunlow, and it's at 7 p.m. tomorrow. Are you aware of how people can attend? Can you just turn up, I wonder, on the evening, Professor?
Absolutely. It would be nothing make me happier than people to show up that evening.
Okay, I think it's going to be interesting. Kevin, lovely to talk to you, albeit briefly, but as I say, I'd love to return to this conversation again into the future, if you'd be willing.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Take care of yourself. Enjoy your time here. Okay. Right. Now, I just want to give a mention to the Mega Summer Draw. The Mega Summer Cash Draw is ongoing. Today, we're giving away $2,500 to a lucky listener. If you haven't bought your ticket yet, it is not too late. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, and get your tickets. There are three draws in total, $15,000 up for grabs, $2,500 this afternoon, $2,500 next Friday, $10,000 next Friday. So that's three draws that you can be in if you get your tickets. Go to highlandradio.com. It's quick, easy and secure to do it there. But if you want us to help, give us a call here at the radio station, 07491 25000, and we will help to make sure that your number is in the draw drum. It is really very simple. All of you who've entered, your name goes into the draw drum, a number associated with the name goes into your draw drum, it's pulled out, you've won $2,500, and it goes back in. And who's to say, if you're really lucky, you could win it again. All tickets purchased up to 3 p.m. today will be entered into the draw, which takes place on the Jive Time show at 3:30. Good luck if you're entering. Highlandradio.com, you'll see the link there. Safe and secure and quick. Or give us a call now, 07491 25000. We will literally make sure your name is in the draw drum for that draw at 3:30.